This shiur is for Zchus Refuah Shleima for Bina Bas Freida. She should have a Refuah Shleima from our Divrei Torah. We have a Gemara Maseches Pesachim, which seems to be a very neutral machlokis, a very simple discussion where the Mishnah wants to know exactly what is the Nusach HaBracha. What are we supposed to say when we come to the conclusion of Magid on Leil HaSeder? So the Mishnah tells us as follows. We have a Bracha Asher Ge'alanu. That's what we refer to it as, which concludes Magid. So let's see what the Mishnah says in the first line. The Fikach, Anachnu Chayavim Lahodos Ulahaleh Lishabeach Lefaer Leromim Lahadir Levarach Laali Lekalis. Because we understand that God took us out of Mitzrayim, and because we appreciate all the incredible miracles that He did for us on that occasion, therefore, Lefikach, Anachnu Chayavim, we have to go above and beyond in our praise and our gratitude for Him. Continues the Mishnah. We have to say, thank you, Lemishas Alavaseinu Velanu, He who did all the miracles for our fathers and for ourselves. Eskalanisim Ha'ele, Hotziyana Me'avdus L'cheres Me'yagun L'simcha Me'eva L'yamtov Me'afele L'yar Gadol Mishiba L'geula V'nomer L'fanav Haleluka. Says the Mishnah, V'chosim Me'geula. And you end off by saying, Baruch Atah Hashem Ga'al Yisrael. So far so good, everyone's in agreement. Says Rab Tarfon, you have to say, Asher ga'alanu v'ga'alas avaseinu mimitzrayim, v'lo ha'yachosim. That's what he said. Thank you, Hashem, Asher ga'alanu v'ga'alas avaseinu mimitzrayim. And that's the way he would finish off the bracha. Rabbi Kiva says, no. That's not good enough. When it comes to the night of the Seder, and you're concluding all of Magid, you have to say not only thank you for all the geula, asher ke'alana v'galas avasena mimitzrayim, and lahodus elahala, we have to thank you for all of that, but also, Rabbi Kiva adds, you have to say, ken Hashem alokeinu v'lokei avasenu yagiyenu, l'moadim v'lirgalim achirim habayim l'krosenu l'shalom, smeichem v'vinyan irecha v'sasim ba'avodasecha, v'nochal sham min apsachim min azvachim. Says Rabbi Kiva, it's not good enough to thank God for all that we experienced in the past. We need to also offer a tefillah going forward. Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagiyenu. We hope we will have the opportunity to experience Pesach the way it's supposed to be celebrated. To have it being done in the Beis HaMikdash, with the Karban Pesach, with the Zvachim, the way really Pesach is supposed to be celebrated. So it sounds like a rather simple and somewhat insequential machlokas that the Mishnah mentions here. But when you think about it, it is a tremendously significant disagreement that the Mishnah has here, and I want to focus on that important theme and how it really penetrates the theme of the evening of the Seder. What I mean by that is as follows. Let's take a little bit of a tour throughout the legendary life of the great Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva was one of the greatest Tanoim. The Medrash tells us, I just named my son Akiva after the great Rabbi Kiva, because I was always extremely inspired by the life of Rabbi Kiva. I think he was one of the greatest leaders that ever lived. It's not just my own thought. The Medrash says there were four great leaders who lived a full and complete life till Me'av Esrim Shana, 120 years. Who were those?
Moshe
Rabbeinu, the Pasuk says. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the Nasi. We have Hillel HaZaken, the original Hillel. All the base Hillel comes from the original Hillel HaZaken. And the Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah Daf Chav Ches, Hillel was the Rebbe of all the great luminaries of his generation. Shmodim Talmidim Hayilel Hillel HaZaken. 30 of them were like Moshe Rabbeinu. 30 of them were like Yehoshua ben Nun. Hillel was amazing. And the fourth personality that the Medrash teaches us was a life of Shlemus, was that of the life of Rabbi Kiva. Amazing. He lived an incredibly full and accomplished, a very highly achieved life. Now, it is well known that the time in history in which Rabbi Kiva lived through was a time of complete devastation, was complete destruction. Rabbi Kiva lived through the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And one could imagine that the feeling of the people of his time was one of despair, of despondency, of depression, of hopelessness. They were kicked out of the land. They thought that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that was the end of the Jewish people. And I would imagine it was all just hopelessness and dejection. What else can a person feel? And Rabbi Kiva's job at that, being the leader of that period in history, was to elevate and to raise the Jewish people and to reassure them and to always be involved in encouraging them that no, you've gone through so much tragedy and you've been through so much destruction, but life will turn itself back around. And we will once again have a Beis HaMikdash. That was what Rabbi Kiva was all about. He was the ultimate optimist. He was the positive thinker all the time. He was always making sure to be a visionary, the idealist who always infused that feeling into his generation to make sure that they were always on a positive trajectory, always looking forward toward a positive and bright future. Just look at some of the stories that were told that the Gemara shares with us about Rabbi Akiva. So we have the famous story in the end of Maseches Makos, Daf Chaf Dalet, where the Gemara shares two different occasions in which Rabbi Akiva's response to the destruction, to the Churban, was dramatically different from those of the rest of his generation. Says the Gemara, Kvar Haya, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva. They seem to be a tight-knit group of friends that were always traveling together, that seemed to be going in different missions. So the Gemara tells us there in the end of Maseches Makos that they were all traveling. Vishamu kol hamona shel romi, mipalto berachok mea ve'esr mil. They hear that there's a large commotion from the Roman, I don't know who it was, from the Roman kingdom was getting together celebrating hischilu kulam bochim Rabbi Akiva Maseches. So all of the friends of Rabbi Akiva begin to cry. The Romans who just destroyed the Beis HaMikdash are getting away with it. They're celebrating. Life is easy for them. So they begin to cry. It just accentuated the feelings of loss to them even more profoundly than it ever had been felt. And Rabbi Akiva somehow sees something positive in this. Rabbi Akiva Mitzachik. Amrulo, they say it seems to be inappropriate. Mipnei ma ata Mitzachik. Why are you in a good mood? Why are you laughing? Amar lahem, Rabbi Akiva responds to them almost like he didn't understand the question. Va'atem mipnei ma atem bochim. May I ask, says Rabbi Akiva, why are all of you so depressed? Why are all of you so sad? Amrulo, you're not supposed to be watching him, right? Okay. Amrulo, halalu kushim shemishtachamim la'atzavim. Rabbi Akiva somehow finds something positive in this whole experience. And he ends off and he says, Uma lo'over ritzono kach, lo'osi ritzono alachas kama v'kama. If God allows life to be so pleasant for those who defy His will, who go against everything that He wants for the world, everything that He stands for, and yet God allows them to have a positive life, can you imagine the schar that is waiting for us? Those of us who listen to the will of God, those of us who follow His instruction and who do all that He wants, Rabbi Akiva sees only the positive in that experience that they had, which on the face value seemed to be an experience of churban, an experience of ultimate tragedy. Says the Gemara, Shuv pam achas hayo'olun liYerushalayim. On another occasion they gathered together this group of Talmidei Chachamim and they were going to Yerushalayim. Kiven shehigiyu laharat Sofim, they get to Harat Sofim and now they're able to overlook the makom of the Beis HaMikdash. Karu bigdeyam, let's not forget, they had experienced the Churban. They saw what it was like to have a Beis HaMikdash and now they see desolation. They see it's totally desecrated. They see there's nothing there, totally destroyed. Karu bigdeyam, they all begin to rip Kriya. Kiven shehigiyu laharabayis, then they get a closer look onto the makom HaMikdash and they see a shul sheyatzam beis kachya kadashim. They see animals roaming around there. Hischilu hein bochin Rabbi Akiva Maseches. Once again, they all begin to cry. The natural instinct of a human being is to cry when you see such destruction, when it becomes so real to you. And once again, Rabbi Akiva has no problem. Rabbi Akiva sees only the positive. And Rabbi Akiva tries to explain to them, well, the same way that this prophecy came true, that the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed, that means the other prophecy will also come true, that Od Yeshvu Zekenim Zekenos Berachovos Yerushalayim. And Rabbi Akiva ends off the story with that note, and his friends say, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva Nichamtanu. He made them feel a sense of positive spirit, that life can be once again put back together, and life once again will be a positive one for the Jewish people. Now the Maharsha and that Gemara asks a very obvious point, and that is, we know that there are laws that govern Avelis. We know that when we come to the makom of Churban Beis HaMikdash, we have an obligation to rip Kriya. We have an obligation to feel a sense of loss. So Rabbi Akiva just totally ignored that halacha. Rabbi Akiva overlooked it. He didn't think it was important to feel the avelus of that period in time. After all, this was probably one of the first times they were going to experience a Churban Beis HaMikdash. This is one of the first times they were going back to the place that they had lost. Shouldn't he have naturally ripped Kriya as well?
Didn't he rip Kriya? He didn't rip Kriya.
No, the Gemara says, Karu Bigdeim, they did. And it seems he didn't. That's what it would seem. So the Maharsha writes, no, you're correct, Monty. The Maharsha says, of course Rabbi Akiva ripped Kriya also.
Right.
But the incredible ability of Rabbi Akiva was to explain to them, this is the life of a Jew. I can sit here and I can rip Kriya, and I can be sad, and I can be in pain, and I can feel the destruction, and I can watch my whole world being destroyed in front of me, but I still have the ability to see something positive. I can still look forward with optimism to something that will be the vision of the future. While he's ripping Kriya, and while he's sitting there with his torn garment, and while he's doing all the steps of Avelis that are appropriate for someone to do when coming in contact with the Makam of the Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Kiva understands there's a way that we do that also. There's a way that a Jew mourns. We understand that yes, we have profound sense of loss at certain periods in our life, and we have profound sense of depression when things go wrong and when things are not the way we expect them to be, but yet Rabbi Kiva assures the neighbors of his generation that no, the Jewish people once again, Od Yeshu Zakenu Muzakenu, life is going to come back together and we have what to be positive about. If you just think for a moment about the incredible experiences of the life of Rabbi Kiva himself, can you imagine? Here's a man who came to learning later on in life. We all know the story, the Gemara says, 40 years old, Rabbi Kiva all of a sudden begins to start learning. And his wife meets him, Rachel, Bas Kalba Savua, her husband. Her father was the most prominent Jew in Yerushalayim, and her father was not interested at all in supporting this young man, Rabbi Kiva, who was not yet the great person that he became. But she believed in him. And he builds himself up to the point that he has 12,000 Talmidim. And we're told that he comes back to meet his wife after many, many years, building up all of his reputation, building up all of his influence, comes back to meet his wife many years later with thousands of students following behind him. Can you imagine the scene? Can you imagine, understand what he built? All of Klal Yisrael was weighing on him. And the Gemara says, Kula meisu b'perek echad. Imagine all that you spent your entire life building gets destroyed in a span of 6 weeks. B'perek echad. The Gemara says, between Pesach and Shavuos. His entire life's work. It's not like someone dropped a bomb on the building, but everything else was left. His entire life's work, every last student that he had, was gone. To the point that the Gemara says, "V'haya ha'olam shamim." The world was empty, the world was desolate. These people, these individuals were the most well-known, the most highly regarded, the most sought-after personalities in the world. Anybody who had questions knew to turn to them. And yet, they left such an incredible void. And can you imagine the feeling of Rabbi Kiva after all that he built, after all that he had given of himself, all the self-sacrifice, all the years of schnarring around to build the yeshiva that he built? Can you imagine how much he had to do? And how much he put of himself and his time and his energy, and this is what I get? Every last student dies, all of his influence, I would say that would be a cause for the deepest sense of depression one can ever imagine. And yet the Gemara says, turn to the next side of the page, the Gemara says Rabbi Kiva picks himself up immediately after experiencing the horrible tragedy that he went through personally in his own life. Rabbi Kiva lost everything. All of his energy was put forth for nothing. Achebar Rabbi Kiva Eitzel Rabbeinu Shebedarom. He picks up right after that sense of tremendous loss and unbelievable tragedy that he personally went through. He picks up and he goes to the Darom and he starts searching around to find new students to build a new school. I would say you've done enough. You're 100 years old. Give up. Obviously, God doesn't want to hear from you. Obviously, God is not interested in your life mission. Have you not gotten the message? Obviously, God just wants you to stop. But Rabbi Kiva says, no. You can be through horrific destruction in your life, but I'm going to find those 5 students who want to study Torah with me, and I'm going to build it all again. And the Gemara says, who did he pick? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rab Yossi, Rab Shimon, Rab Elezer ben Shamua. They are, if you look through the Mishnayos, they are, those 5 Tanaim are the basis of all of Torah Shebaal Peh as we know it today. Nowhere in Chazal, I believe, do you find anything that is mentioned from the original group of 12,000 students that Rabbi Kiva lost. Everything was gone. Nothing. Rabbi Kiva has no problem. All of Torah Shebaal Peh comes from these 5 students. How do we know? The Gemara says, Stam Sifra, Stam Mishnah is?
Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir.
Rabbi Meir.
Stam Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda.
Every single one. The Gemara Zohar. Says, every single, Stam Zohar is Rabbi Shimon Yochai. Every single piece of Torah Shebaal Peh came from the visionary Rabbi Kiva, who understood that yes, life can be as awful as it is, and I can lose everything that I worked so many years to build and to accomplish, but I'm going to start again. And from there, I will build the entire foundation of all that Torah Sheba'al Peh represents for generations going forward. That was the incredible ability that Rabbi Akiva had. He was determined. He was resilient. He was a man who had the understanding that if you stay strong and you're willing to restore that which was lost, and you're willing to rebuild all the tragedy that you see in front of you, Rabbi Akiva said, I believe in the bright future of the Jewish people and I will never give up. That was the greatness of Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, Reb Tarfon, who we're told was one of the closest friends, one of the contemporaries of Rabbi Akiva, Reb Tarfon makes a statement and he says, Kol ha-poresh mimenu ke-poresh min ha-chaim. He points at his friend Rabbi Akiva and he says, anyone who lives life without him is as if ke-poresh min ha-chaim. You're just not living. So the simple understanding of that statement of Reb Tarfon is based on what the Rambam says. The Rambam tells us, what does the pasuk mean? V'chei achicha imach. We're told that when you have somebody who unfortunately kills b'shogeg, and he has to go into Ari Miklat, he has to put himself into Galus, and he's living in solitude, he's living by himself, and life is horrible. So the pasuk says, V'chei achicha imach. You're not allowed to let him die in Ari Miklat. You have to make life comfortable for him. It's not made to be a prison. It's made to be a place where he goes to get a kapar, but we have to make sure that there are opportunities for him in that Ari Miklat. And along with those opportunities, says the Rambam, means Talmud Shegala. When you have a Talmud that ends up going into Galus, Ari Miklat, unfortunately he ends up there. Maglin Rabo Imo, his Rebbe has to go with him. Why? Because the Pasuk says, V'chei Achicha Imach. And the Rambam says, if a person likes to learn and you don't have a Rebbe that's there with you to teach you, that's killing a person. That's taking away your source of life. So that's the simple understanding of what Reb Tarfon means. Kol ha-poresh mimenu ke-poresh min ha-chaim. If you don't have a great teacher like Rabbi Akiva in your life, what do you have at all? You're missing everything. But I believe maybe Reb Tarfon was saying something so much more profound. Reb Tarfon was saying that us living through this horrible tragedy that we're living, that we're experiencing, us living through this incredible time of churban, of horrific destruction in front of us, everywhere we turn, life is getting horrible, worse, everywhere you look, life is just horrible for the Jewish people. If you don't have someone as optimistic as Rabbi Akiva in your life, you won't make it through. Kol ha-poresh mimenu ke-poresh min ha-chaim. If you don't have that visionary who can show you that by being strong, there's something that can be built once again and it can be stronger than it ever was before, then there's no way that I would ever be able to make it through this experience of my life. That is what Rabbi Akiva meant to his generation. And this is why his life was such an important figure, was such an important role. The Medrash tells us, Rav Soloveitchik points out, that the Medrash tells us, on the occasion of Bria Sa'olam, when God created the world, so we're told in the Medrash that God was Bore Olamos Umachrivan. God created worlds and He destroyed them. Until finally He got it right, the Medrash says. Hard to understand what it means. But it says, finally He got it right and He said, oh, now everything's exactly the way I want it to be. And then He kept that final version. So Rav Soloveitchik said, why does the Medrash share this strange experience with us? God, as we know, Kihu Amar Vayehi, He just says what He wants and it comes into being. So what, did God have difficulty formulating exactly what He wanted the first time around? It didn't work out for Him the first couple of times. He had to build a world and destroy it and build it again. And the answer, suggests Rav Soloveitchik, is because He wanted to teach us that sometimes our world can be destroyed in front of us. But you're no less than God. God's own world didn't come out the way He wanted it to come. And He had no problem going and building it again. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what the life of a human being is all about. Things sometimes work out differently than we expect them to. And life doesn't always pan out to be the way we would have liked it to be. And sometimes we experience tremendous tragedy. And God taught us from the outset of creation that He created worlds, He destroyed them, but He created them again until He got it right. Rabbi Pelkowitz, who just passed away last week, he was a very distinguished personality of this generation, and I had the unbelievable privilege. I was the assistant rabbi in the White Shul for 4 years, and I used to sit right next to him every Shabbos, and we used to talk a lot during davening and after davening, and we shared many, many conversations. And I remember I was so inspired because at his 95th birthday that they had 2 years ago, he got up and he spoke, and everybody was wondering, what is he going to talk about on a 95th birthday after 65 years in the rabbinate, after all of the incredible community that he built single-handedly in the five towns? So What is a man like that going to say when they celebrate his 95th birthday? What's he going to talk about? There's so many directions he can go. And you know what he spoke about? He spoke about all the times in life that he failed. And he said that his mantra in life always was, it's okay to fail as long as next time you fail better. Such an amazing line. It wasn't his own. He quoted it from someone else. But it really stuck with me. 95 years old, that's what you want to share with other people. After all the accomplishments, everybody knows you, world famous, you've done amazing things throughout your life. You have very famous children who are doing great things on their own. It doesn't make a difference. The only thing he focused on is, it's okay to fail. Just make sure next time you fail better. Learn from the mistake. And make sure next time you don't make the same mistake. Mistakes happen. There is tragedy in life. There is disappointment. It's going to happen. It's going to happen to all of us. There's no perfect life. There's no such thing. That's not the experience of humanity. But we all have the opportunity to rise above it and to build forward and to try again like Rabbi Akiva did and to be optimistic that there will be a future. If you look, the Medrash tells us, yes?
Sorry, but with Rabbi Akiva, when you have such a devastating failure, mm-hmm. aren't you supposed to say to yourself, maybe I'm doing something completely wrong? It's not like as if something was left and something was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Not actually Rabbi
Akiva. Right.
You couldn't have anything worse than that.
Correct.
Aren't you supposed to say, well, maybe I just did it, maybe I'm not the right person for this, or maybe...
So obviously it means you have to do some introspection, and you cannot just ignore the reality of what took place, mm-hmm. but to learn from the lessons and to be have the courage to move on. How many people do we see that lose children? Rahman al-Islam, God forbid, we should never be through such a challenge. But you see people who lose children, but who lose their desire to continue to live. Because the tragedy, the pain is so acute, they can't see any purpose in moving on in life. And Rabbi Akiva teaches us, yes, you have to internalize whatever messages are meant to be learned from the experience that you had. And it's very hard sometimes for human beings to really understand and think about and compartmentalize that part of their lives and then move on with other aspects of life. You'll never lose that sense of loss. But at the same time, like the Maharsha pointed out, Rabbi Akiva, when he came to the place of Churban, Rip Kriya, at the same time that he was able to see the positive perspective. He felt that those two things are not contradictory feelings. Those two emotions, those two expressions can work together very well because that's what the life of the Jew has always been historically. We have been challenged, we have been beaten, we have been oppressed, but we have always been able to look forward to rebuilding. Look at the generation of the Holocaust. I am amazed every time I meet a Holocaust survivor and every time I have the opportunity and the schus to speak to one of them. It is so difficult for us to think about what they went through. With all the movies that we've seen and with all the books that we've read and all the documentaries that have come out and all of the witnesses that have spoken and of Steven Spielberg and everything, when you meet a survivor and you hear it from them and then you watch how they turned around and got married and had the will to continue to live, this is the story of the Jewish people. Is there no greater people who is more resilient than we are? It's the most amazing phenomenon. Who has the will to continue to live when this is what you've just been through, this hell, this horrible life? There was an article I just read recently about a woman who went through the war who never told her children until she was 70 years old. She never said that she was a survivor because she said, I didn't want my children to suffer through it. Everyone saw that article? It just came out. I think she just passed away. And it said that she lived her whole life, her kids had no idea. Can you imagine how a person lives with that inside of their head? You live your life, you give your children the perfect experience, the best that you can do as a parent, you raise them to be happy children and to go to school and to be educated, and you never say a word about all that you've been through. Can you understand the unbelievable strength that it takes of a person to be able to do that? I'm not saying psychologically whether it's healthy or not, I have no idea. But just think about the courage of the Jewish people. It's amazing. And traditionally, this has been through our history, what the Jewish people have always been able to do. So the Gemara says about a little bit later in history, after Rabbi Akiva, there was a tremendous massacre that took place, an unbelievable oppression, terrible persecution that was going on. And finally, things quieted down. So the Medrash tells us in Shir HaShirim, the Medrash says, on the occasion when everything calmed down, Nichnusu kol chachmei hador le'usha, all of the great Talmidei Chachamim of the generation, all the great leaders, go to the city of Usha, and they surround the table of Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Loi to come discuss with him, what do we do now? We've been oppressed, and we've been prosecuted, and there's been massacres, and life is horrible. Now they come to discuss with Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Loi. Now that life is quiet again, what do we do now? And the Medrash tells us as follows, number 8. Shalchu Eitzel Zikne HaGalil V'yamru. Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Loi sends back a message, and he says, Kol mi shehu lamed yavo v'yilmad. Anyone who knows, who has a background in learning Torah, should come and study. We're going to open a new yeshiva. V'kol mi she'enu lamed. Anyone who does not have a background, also yavo v'yilmad. Let's open the floodgates. Let everybody in. Let's start all over. Why is it that they show up at the home of Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Loi? After terrible tragedy. You know why? I believe it's because he was one of those 5 students that came to study under Rabbi Akiva after all of their lives were destroyed. He understood what it means that after complete and utter destruction, we have the ability and the courage to build again. And when it happened in his own lifetime, when there was a massacre and a pogrom in his generation, and the Jews of the time didn't know what to do, the natural place to go was to consult with one of the students of Rabbi Akiva, who understood that this is how we deal with tragedy. This is how we react. This is how we respond as a Jewish people. So we come to the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And the very beginning of the Seder, we have the story of the same 5 Tanoim. You think it's a coincidence? These same 5 people in Maseches Makos, who all came to the Churban, who were all crying, show up at the doorstep of Rabbi Kiva. So what do we say? Maisa, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon, right? Are those the 5 here? Yeah, look at number Bays. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Kiva, right? They're all together. So they were a group of friends who used to travel together. So we have this story on the night of the Seder. They all come, Hayim Mesubim, B'nei Brak. They're all sitting around the table in B'nei Brak. Now, what brought them to B'nei Brak? Anybody know? What? That was the home of Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva lived in B'nei Brak. All of them show up in the home of Rabbi Kiva to have the Seder. 2 questions. Number 1. Rabbi Kiva was the student. His Rebbe was Rabbi Lazar. So why is the Rebbe, who's much older, who is the teacher of Rabbi Kiva, going to B'nei Brak to have the Seder by his student, by his Talmud? And moreover, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sukkah, that Rabbi Lazar was of the opinion that people should not leave their homes on Yom Tov. We should be spending Yom Tov with our families. We should be engaging with each other. We should have a good time. Simchas Yom Tov is very important. Rabbi Lazar said, Mishabeach Anias Hatzlanim. I think this is the one time of year that it's good to be lazy. Don't go to the Beis Medrash to learn so much in Yom Tov. It's good to spend time with your family, said Rabbi Lazar. So if Rabbi Lazar is the one who says you should stay home with your family, excuse me, Rabbi Lazar, what are you doing traveling to B'nei Brak? What was that all about? So the Svasemis writes, no, you got the story all wrong. You think that that story that we start off the Haggadah with is really about Yitzias Mitzrayim on the night of the Seder? It's a mistake, writes the Svasemis. It was on a regular night of the week. They happened to get together, and they were all having a good time, and they were all talking and learning, and then they started to get into a discussion about Yitzias Mitzrayim, and all of a sudden they got so carried away with the discussion that it was time to daven Shacharis. Nothing to do with Pesach. Could be. But then why do we mention it in the Haggadah? What does that have to do with our story of Seder night? The simple understanding is that it was on the night of the Seder. So Rabbi Ruvi Margolius, who was a tremendous Talmud Chacham in the last generation, he writes in one of his Sfarim, he says, no, you got the story wrong also. What happened was these 5 tzaddikim were traveling together, and coincidentally it just so happened to be that they ended up on a boat, and when they got off the boat, it was Erev Pesach, and the closest city to the port, to Yafo, was B'nai Brak. So that's where they ended up. Where are we going to go for Pesach? We don't have enough time to go home. So we'll go to Rabbi Kiva's house. That's what happened. Then he writes, he found in a manuscript that it says they didn't go to B'nai Brak, they went to B'nai Krach, which means they went to some little city somewhere. So he says, that's indicative of the fact that I'm correct. That it just means they stepped off the boat, they know where to go, so they just ended up wherever they ended up. That's the way, but that's not the simple understanding of the story. We know the simple shot in the story is, we say this story on the night of the Seder because this happened on the night of the Seder. And we have to answer that question. First of all, why would they end up in the home of Rabbi Kiva? And number 2, in particular, Rabbi Lazar, who is the one who says in Maseches Sukkah, you're supposed to stay at home on Yom Tov. What is he doing there, of all people? So one of my great teachers, Rabbi Mordechai Kalbach, he wrote the Svarim Chavetz Zelos HaSharon. Anybody saw them? So I used to learn with him in Yerushalayim when I was in the Mir. We used to learn every day. And he told me once before Pesach such an amazing insight. He said, you know why? He said, I believe that this was the year after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Can you imagine? The highlight of the year for Jews was the experience of Karban Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash and celebrating, saying Hallel. The Gemara tells us a description of what it was like when the Jews used to converge onto Yerushalayim and all the rooftops would almost fly off, the Gemara says, because of the singing and the rejoicing by Karban Pesach and by everything, the Seder, Hallel, such a beautiful scene. Can you imagine that first year after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Jews are walking around, what are we going to do this year? We have an obligation to feel a sense of chayrus. We're supposed to feel like a free people under these conditions, after all that we've just been through. No Beis HaMikdash, no Karban Pesach, no Yerushalayim. What's Pesach going to be this year? How are we going to feel Zman Chayrusein? You know what the only answer to that is? We're going to have a Seder with Rabbi Kiva. He's the only one who will be able to teach us, this year in particular, what it means to live a life of Zman Chayruseinu, even under these conditions. Even though we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash and life looks like it couldn't be any worse than it is right now. That's why they ended up in Rabbi Kiva's home in Bnei Brak. Because there was no other way that that generation would make it through Pesach that year. Because they just gave up hope. And they knew that the only hope left was to go to Rabbi Kiva and to have the Seder by him. Go back to the Mishnah that we started with and then we'll close. See, we're out of time. What? Here? So the Mishnah that we started with has what seems to be a very simple machlokas between Reb Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva. How do we end off Maggid on the night of the Seder? Well, Reb Tarfon says, you have to say, Asher ga'alanu v'ga'alo sabaseinu mi'mitzrayim. Thank you for taking us out of Mitzrayim. We became a free people. Life is great. Says Rabbi Kiva, that's not good enough. That is not the objective of the night of the Seder. We cannot simply sit around and thank God for all that happened when we came out of Mitzrayim and all the miracles that we survived the Holocaust. Says Rabbi Kiva, an integral part of the Seder needs to be Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagienu. We hope that you will bring us. Look forward to the future. Yes, you're living through a generation when life is horrible, when there are terror attacks every day, when you look into the news from Israel and you're afraid to watch what happened overnight while you were sleeping here in America. Yes, life is horrible, and life is very challenging, and life is tragic for some of us, and life is not the way we want it to be. But says Rabbi Kiva, as much as we talk about all the terrible tragedies that the Jews have been through for all these years, throughout all our history and all the millennia, we also use the night of the Seder to remind ourselves, Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagienu. We know that God has promised us that He will bring us back to the time when we will once again celebrate in the Beis HaMikdash, when we will have Mashiach, when life will be perfect again. Yes, right now it's hard for us to imagine. Right now it's hard for us to actually think about that when we see the tragedy that's in front of us. But Rabbi Kiva says, Rabbi Tarfon, you're missing a very critical component to what the Seder needs to be all about. Rabbi Kiva carries the entire Seder. Rabbi Kiva reconfigures what our emotion is supposed to be on the night of the Seder. It's not about only thinking about tragedy. It's nice to share all the Holocaust stories, V'hisha Amda, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzileinu, and you want to tell all the stories, it's great, and there's time for all of that during the Seder. But don't forget, says Rabbi Kiva, when you wrap it all up, as much as you recount, as much as you relive all of those experiences, you need to also make sure that you remind yourself and your family, Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagienu. And if you miss that, says Rabbi Kiva, you have not fulfilled your obligation of Maggid, because that is so critical. The Chasam Sofer writes in a tshuva that the Gemara says one of the items that you're able to use for maror is called tamcha. Tuf mem chaf aleph. That's what it's referred to in Gemara Lashon. Says the Chasam Sofer, why is it referred to as tamcha? Well, he says, obviously that's a vegetable, but why does the Gemara call it tamcha? He says, because tamcha stands for the words tamid misaprim kivod kel. Writes the Chasam Sofer. You can be eating the maror. You can be experiencing the worst depths of your life. The most horrific of conditions. The most horrible tragedies. You can be living through all of that and experiencing it in the most profound and deeply painful way that one can ever imagine. says the Chasam Sofer, at the same time that you eat that mar, tamid misaprim kivod kil. We understand that even under those conditions, we have the ability to look forward to the salvation, to the redemption that God will bring us, because that is what has always happened. That is what will continue to happen. And that, says Rabbi Akiva, is really what the Seder is all about. We cannot simply have a one-dimensional Seder when we talk about only tragedy. It's important. We need to have a collective memory as a Jewish people of all that we've been through. But that's not enough. Says Rabbi Akiva, we need to go beyond that. And we need to make sure that we also relive the experience that I lived through, says Rabbi Akiva. I've been through worse tragedy than any of you. I experienced the Churban Beis HaMikdash. I built a dynasty my entire life, went down the tubes in 6 weeks. Everything I worked so hard to accomplish, every last one of my students was gone. I lived through tragedy, but I was able to see past it. I was able to be positive, I was able to be a visionary, and this, says Rabbi Akiva, is what every Jew needs to think about as they experience the evening of the Seder and as they go through the redemptive process of what it means. Zman Chayrusenu. So I wish everybody a Chag.